Hello, welcome to Viewpoints. I'm Boris Chassaigne here with you for the next 3 minutes. Today, three stories out of British Columbia. Nelson Public Library speaks out about the hate campaign that forced it to cancel a drag event.
We had reasons to believe that their safety could have potentially been at risk. And it is our duty to protect the safety of our staff.
A couple living in their RV is having a difficult time finding a place to park during the winter months in Revelstoke.
I call us the Tiggers because we have to bounce like Tiggers from one spot to another, staying off the radar, basically, right? But it's just a life.
That's all we were looking for, is just a place where these vehicles can be parked for the winter.
In Abbotsford, author Jay Lang has been keeping busy. She's just released her 11th novel in 3 years.
It boils down to how bad you want it. You have to really give her. If you want to make it, you've got to push. And don't be afraid of that, you know? I mean, you got nothing to lose. Just, you know, care about it and push like hell and go out there and don't let anybody stop you. And you can do it, you know? Absolutely.
And to Liverpool, the East Coast community is working on its harbor and water infrastructure. Happy to have you with us.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
You're tuned in to Viewpoints, local news nationwide. The Nelson, BC Public Library is speaking out about a week-long campaign that saw an event featuring a drag performer reading stories to kids canceled following threats that made the administration fear for staff and participant safety. It was after announcing the event on social media that a campaign rife with homophobia and misinformation ignited the rage in comment sections around the West Kootenay region. The campaign appears to have been influenced by a video posted by a local woman who falsely claimed the event went against the criminal code and library policies by entertaining a sexually charged environment geared toward children. More on this with John Roon in Nelson, BC.
Nelson Public Library staff spent this week facing a storm they didn't expect. A wave of backlash rife with homophobia and misinformation washed over staff, leaving them wading through nonstop phone calls, emails, and in-person visits from outraged locals protesting the planned Drag Queen Storytime event slated for Saturday. But it was when the library staff began receiving threats that the administration decided to pull the plug. Chief Librarian Tracy Theron spoke to KCR News on Wednesday afternoon.
You know, we had reasons to believe that their safety could have potentially been at risk. And it is our duty to protect the safety of our staff. And secondly, of course, is having a protest outside of our small library is really the opposite environment that we hope to create at the event.
What those threats consisted of or who was behind them, the library would not comment on, but Nelson police have been made aware of the latest development. The Drag Queen Storytelling Hour, intended by the library to put on a family-friendly event showcasing inclusion and a curiosity for reading, has been targeted by opponents with accusations that such events are inappropriate for children and are used to groom minors. One local woman got major attention online in the West Kootenays this week after posting a video falsely claiming that the event was breaking the criminal code. The same accusation have been noted against similar events across North America in recent years, escalating to the point of armed protesters crashing a drag queen event in Oregon last fall. Tracy Theron says the event aligns with the library's strategic plan to showcase inclusivity.
You know, we all live in this community and love libraries, and that's why we work here. We are not here to make tons of money. If we were, we wouldn't be working in a library. So it's been stressful for sure, but it's also been a bit uplifting because of the support we've been receiving as well.
Library Board Chair Annie Holtby said they have also received a wave of hate, but that they are standing with the library staff.
Like the staff, we're feeling sad and regret that we have to postpone this event at this time, but have full support and trust that the staff will continue to work with the community to be able to offer something in the future.
After the decision to cancel was announced, a local group has organized an alternate story time and protest outside Nelson City Hall this weekend in response to the hate campaign. It will kick off at 10:30 on Saturday. Reporting in Nelson, John Roon.
You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
And we stay in British Columbia to meet up with two Revelstokians who have been living in their RV for months. And all they seem to need, at least for the moment, is a place to park during the winter. Gerald and Ida Davis live in their RV with their dog Peanut, and their son lives beside them in a smaller RV. Summertime does not seem to be a problem for the Davises, as it's easy to disappear, says Jerry. But in the winter, they want a place to park so they don't have to move daily. They park at the community center so they can use the pool and charge their batteries, and they also need to go to the pullout at night so they don't get ticketed. Ida says they want to stop bouncing around. Jerry has a heart condition. Their son is autistic and can't work. Ida takes care of both of them. They are on a waiting list for affordable housing, but Jerry thinks he'll be dead before they get in. In Revelstoke, British Columbia, Megan Dooling caught up with the Davises and with Revelstoke Mayor Gary Schultz.
My name is Gerald Davis. I'm 56 years old here in April. I was born here in Revelstoke back in 67. I've been gone for about a total of 10 years, but been here for about 45 years. Currently living in a, 8x25-foot motorhome, and it needs repairs. You know, we were living at a campground for 10 years. Due to differences with the landlord, we ended up vacating that area, and we've now been living in this motorhome since near the end of July of 2022, and of course it's now 2023. We are on a waiting list for affordable housing, but that's anywhere from 2 to 5+ years before we could get on it.
And your partner came in when we were talking. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Ida Davis. I live in a motorhome.
Why don't you guys give me a little tour? It's nice in here. It's cozy.
Okay, well, back in the back, it used to be the bathroom. Things broke. Like, you know, this is from 88. So we're in the process of repairing. And there again, you know, I'm on disability. It takes money. It's not cheap to fix these things, like just like a house. So we're working on that. And then you have the little kitchen area.
Yeah,
There's currently no fridge because it died. Our food, it goes in the cooler in the cab.
Yeah.
And that's where our food's at.
And then
up in the front here.
When we're in here, so it's nice to, I can do baking and whatnot, so.
The oven works.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I just baked a cake the other day, and we finished that off, I think, yesterday.
Yeah. And then up in the front, there's kind of a little bit of a living room right now. Like, you know, we got a twin bed on down here and
place to store our bins. And
we live out of bins. Everything's bins and stuff like that. That's how you live like this.
It's very organized, and you guys have some plants.
It's a process of trying to survive in something in this, like this, in cold weather.
And then above your head was where
the AC,
unit was.
The campground Jerry mentioned they used to live in is the Smoky Bear Campground, west of town. Jerry has been on disability for years after a shoulder injury, and he recently suffered a heart attack and had to have surgery. Since moving out of the campground, the family moves back and forth between town and a truck pullout in the Big Eddy every day in the winter.
I call us the Tiggers because we have to bounce like Tiggers from one spot to another, staying off the radar, basically, right? But it's just a life, I guess. It's just, you have to know who is in that community, right? Because there are so many other communities. Like, we have, everyone has their own cliques. So you have people that live in houses, or, you know, everyone has a clique. Well, this is our clique. I can't change that at this time, right? So, but I like to talk to them.
find out where they're from, because they're all interesting people, and they're all from all over different areas. Even people from the U.S. are up here. When they're living in RVs down there, they have a harder time than we are up here. But there is still struggles here in different communities, not just Revelstoke.
Having to move every day takes a toll on them.
I don't want to move some days. It's like, oh, do we have to? I just want to stay here for a day or two and just recoup, right? You know, you can't just stay in one place right now.
It's always in your head, like, oh, at 3 o'clock, I'm going to have to go back.
Yeah.
When you ask them what would make their situation easier, Jerry and Ida have what seems like a simple request.
It's not that we want something year-round. And here's the clincher, is we don't expect anything for free, right? If they can have an area set out for the winter, just say from November 1st to the beginning of April, we're not having to drive across the highway. We're not having to deal with snotty, slippery roads and trying to, you know, this thing is 8 feet wide. You know what this is like when they pile snow in the middle of the roads to try to get down when you got traffic parked on? It's hard. And you're taking the chance of losing control, hitting somebody's vehicle, or hitting a person, God forbid. That's all we were looking for, is just a place where these vehicles can be parked for the winter. We don't need running water, because if the sandy dump is open, we can go down there, fill our water jugs up, right? We can empty the sewers if they're, like, we have a porta potty because the tanks in this thing are heated. That's all we need.
Revelstoke's mayor is Gary Sulls. He says it's not that simple.
There's all kinds of issues with having them in an area. I get they don't want to bounce around. I understand that. But when they move across the highway to that truck stop, there is those pit toilets that are available for them to use year-round. And so we just don't have the facilities open. And then the community is saying, but we don't want to be able to have people tenting and parking and whatnot and utilizing this, because then we get people who are not caring for the area. So, you know, we're in a really tight bind as to what to do and what not to do.
Do you mind me asking, and I know it's a personal question, you can say no, but what is your monthly income?
Right now, because we're not paying rent, we get just over $1,500 a month.
That's for the two of us.
Because I have PWD, which right now is $977 a month. And then I have my Canadian Pension Plan disability, which is $637. So we're in between $1,500 to $1,600. Our son is on disability. He's high-functioning autistic. Max he can get is just over $1,400 a month. A one-bedroom apartment, which is in Columbia Gardens, is $1,200. We can scrimp by on $300 a month for groceries if we're using the food bank, but it's not affordable.
Do you have an income?
I don't. I'm the primary caregiver for my husband in making sure that his health is good and making sure medication is, he's getting it when he needs it, and food, and that's my job as stay-home mom, I guess.
Mayor Sulls says the city can't control rents on affordable housing. He said the city tries to include everybody on discussions about making housing accessible.
And so we can't control some of those things, and we don't want to leave people out. So what do we do as a community to be able to assist those? We want them to be able to stay, to live. They're here. They're making their living. They're doing what they can to survive. How can we accommodate them? And I don't think there's an answer for that at this point in time.
We won't sit here and say, well, we'd like to have an apartment. We'd like to have a house. Because you know what? There are people in this town that are far off worse than we are. There are people in this town who don't even have a tent. They're sleeping under train bridges. They're sleeping under trees. They're sleeping under a tarp. There are those who need it more than we do. We, at this point, we have four walls and a roof. For the majority of this, it keeps the weather off of us.
What would you want people who live in Revelstoke, who maybe own a house or just live their normal day-to-day lives in a comfortable way, what do you want them to know about what the reality is like for some people?
I'd like them to know this is not easy. It's hard. There's days where you don't want to get out of bed.
because you don't want to have to drive somewhere again. You don't want to have to be driving downtown and people giving you a dirty look.
I wave and smile at them, and I don't. That's their problem, not mine. If they want to be discriminating, well, all the power to them. It doesn't make that make me feel any worse than I already do. I just wave and smile, and I get different reactions when I do that. So I'll get they'll wave, or you know, they'll be like, "Oh, okay."
The only thing I would really like for people to remember: it doesn't matter how good a paying job you have, how happy your family life is, how fancy your home is. Just remember this: that you can go to sleep tonight, wake up tomorrow, and it's all gone. You can lose it that fast.
And be in no better situation than we are right now.
Yep, that's all I can say.
In Revelstoke, I'm Megan Dooling.
This is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're tuned to Viewpoints. Check out our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
Author Jay Lang will soon release Snake Oil, her new novel based in Abbotsford. It will be presented at the Chilliwack Library on April 1st. Since the beginning of the 2020 pandemic, Lang has completed 11 novels and is a two-time winner of the Books We Love bestseller award. Lang said her novels are all set in BC because she was always outside growing up. The novels invite the reader into her take on topics that communities face, whether it's drugs, abuse, or mental illness. Stephen Munga spoke with the writer Jay Lang about her start in writing, the reason her books take place in BC, and the advice she has for writers.
From actress to clothing designer, right? So what made you want to pursue the craft of creative writing? Or like what prompted the switch into creative writing?
I have a grade 7 education, right? That's the last year that when you go to UFE, you have to get all your past transcripts and stuff. And so when I got them, I was so shocked because I'd sworn I'd had more of an education. But yeah, I scored high on the entrance thing, so I did well. And I got into English. I was very privileged to be there. I knew that I was very lucky to be there considering my past education. I took this children's lit course, which I thought I was going to sleep through, right? And Jocelyn Coates was the professor at the time, and she was just cool, really, really cool lady. She had everyone write a story, and so I wrote this goofy story, and she said, you know, you should really pursue this. And I went, uh-huh. I mean, as if, right? I'm thinking, no way. Went from there, and then I went to some more creative writing classes, and then they kind of, a few different professors said the same thing, and I just kind of fell in love with it.
Your latest novel is set in the Abbotsford area. When you began this writing journey, did you make it a point to set your stories in BC?
Oh, yeah, man, for sure. I was raised on this little island with no electricity and kerosene lamps and one-room schoolhouse. And back then, you had to really be about nature, about the land, about where you were. There was no stores or a lot of toys or anything. And so I think I really grew up in that culture and grew up close to nature, very, very close to it. And you had to really use your imagination. It was really important to me to kind of showcase that and show hopefully other parts of the world that might read my book that how beautiful and how enriched and how lucky we are to be in this beautiful province. And two, I think it's easier to write about what you know, close my eyes and go into my memories. You know, I was raised part-time on Vancouver Island as well. It was just easier for me to know these places I was writing about because I had lived it and breathed it and tasted it and touched it, you know?
So what can readers expect from Snake Oil?
I totally invite the idea of things that certain people in the community are facing, if it's drugs, abuse, homelessness, mental illness, whatever it is. And I try and invite that in with my characters. This book is written about a girl that's in university and she's stuck here. Her parents retire and go to Scotland and then she's here by herself. So she's kind of beguiled by this guy and he kind of lures her away, this young guy her age. He's into selling drugs, but he comes off as something else to her. And the thing that really, these characters kind of pulled me on this really crazy journey. And I think the thing that I saw them going through the most, or I felt them going through the most, was kind of coming into their own in way of, you know, they have to recognize their own strengths in order to pull their ass out of there. You know what I mean? And kind of find their own purpose and their own strength and their own identity.
What advice can you give to people considering a career in writing and or those young and up and coming writers?
The biggest thing that I would want everyone to know, and that I've spoken about thus far, about my opinion and my journey, is that you have to be resilient. And so I think it boils down to how bad you want it. You have to really give her. If you want to make it, you've got to push. And don't be afraid of that. You know, I mean, you got nothing to lose. You know, you weren't always a writer. Now you have this baby. You're creating this baby and you finally have it. Just, you know, care about it and push like hell and go out there and don't let anybody stop you. And you can do it, you know, absolutely.
My name is Stephen Munger. For these and more stories from local journalists across Canada, visit canada-info.ca.
For a quick look through our periscope, Toronto is marking the third anniversary of the COVID-19 pandemic with a commemorative gathering and public art installation called The Burn, an installation by artists Rager Mooking, David Jaw, and Catherine Tamaro.
We're collecting all of these balls at the culmination of this tour, and then we're doing a big installation at Nathan Phillips Square in a ritualistic burn.
The main event will be beautiful. There will be masses of people there from all over the city, from all spiritual practices, from all kinds of life ways. And I do hope that people take the opportunity to come down and join us.
That story by Danielle Centeno, check it out on canada-info.ca. Andrew Dow reports that Six Nations is studying the possibility of setting up a new transit system, not a full-fledged bus service, but one that could look like an on-demand one. Here's traffic planner Dennis Carr.
We had significant outreach. We reached out to a number of different stakeholders and organizations within the community, including Public Works, Nation Building, Health Services, Social Services, etc. And we're able to do some one-on-one interviews and get some really, really good perspective. And generally what we see and what we can sort of expect is within Six Nations, we'll probably get about 20 to 50 rides per day. Again, it typically starts off slow, and as the service grows and people become familiar with it, those ridership numbers can increase. And for external trips, we looked at both Brantford and Hamilton, about 30 to 50 rides per day as well. So that was sort of the target that we were basing it on.
And for those of you who read and understand Spanish, remember that our Latin American journalist Daniela Leon, based in Toronto, has many stories for you. Her latest tells the story of Wendy Mendez, who has been trying to find out what happened to her mother 39 years ago. She was taken by the Guatemalan military on March 8th, 1984. Wendy Mendez now lives in Canada and is part of a group of citizens who are suing the state of Guatemala in a class action lawsuit called Diario Militar.
Hi, I'm Daniela Leon in Toronto, Ontario. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLGI.
And to close up the show, we turn to the region of Queens in Nova Scotia that received $2.6 million to clean the Liverpool Harbour and to upgrade its water infrastructure. The project is financed jointly by the federal government, Nova Scotia, and the region of Queens. More with Ed Alverson in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
The region of Queens received $2.6 million in joint funding for water and wastewater infrastructure upgrades. Member of Parliament for Halifax West, Lena Metlidge-Diab, Minister of Public Works, Kim Maslin, and Region of Queens Mayor, Darlene Norman, were on hand at Queen's Place Monday to announce the contributions from all three levels of government. The federal government is investing $1 million, the province is kicking in another $872,000, and the Region of Queens is contributing the remaining $698,000. The money will be used to upgrade and replace water, sanitary, and storm sewer lines. Part of the funding will go to decommissioning the existing combined sewer outfall in the Waterloo East sewer shed boundary and ending the generational practice of pumping wastewater into the bay. A new wastewater pumping station, force main, and a storm sewer outfall will also be included in the project. The stormwater system is being designed to withstand 100-year stormwater levels. Minister Maslin says improvements in these systems will go a long way to supporting development and bringing new residents to Queens. And while those are important issues, she says her larger concern is for cleaning up the harbour.
The big thing for me in this project is it's very important that we have a healthy Liverpool Harbour. And this funding today will certainly make sure that we can replace and upgrade that inadequate infrastructure and definitely outdated infrastructure that has been there for way too long.
Mayor Darlene Norman says the Region of Queens has been steadily working on replacing that outdated infrastructure since amalgamation in 1996. She says the application for this project was submitted in 2021, and the region is ready to begin when weather permits.
We've been waiting to do it. So it was just a matter of $2.6 million is a lot of money.
The project is shovel-ready and will take place in two phases over this year and next. Norman says the municipality recognizes residents of Waterloo Street will be inconvenienced over the next 2 years, and the region will keep them informed every step of the way. The mayor says there are still many areas of Queens County with issues around water and wastewater that need to be addressed.
First, we have to correct the outfalls and keep our Liverpool Bay healthy. And I mean, outfall in oceans is just like major outfalls are just so wrong. And then we look forward to parts of our county, which are in peril if they have unhealthy drinking water. So it's... this is one part of a very big puzzle that needs to be put together.
I'm Ed Halverson.
That's all for us at Viewpoints. Thanks to our journalists this week, Megan Dooling, John Roon, Stefan Munga, Ed Halverson, Andrew Dow, Daniel Centeno, and Daniela Leon. National editor Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. Great to have you with us. Stay tuned to the show that follows. Until next week, ciao.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.